College Prep Podcast for parents, teachers, and teens who want better grades with less stress on the path to the perfect college.
Welcome to another episode of the College Prep Podcast, everyone. This is Gretchen Wegner, an academic life coach and founder of an online course called The Anti-Boring Approach to Powerful Studying. And I am here with my co-host.
Hi, I'm Megan Dorsey from College Prep Results, the best SAT and ACT tutor you can find. I'm excited today, Gretchen, because we have a guest who's talking about a very important subject that we've discussed before, but graduation rates.
Yeah.
Karina Dusenberry has spent about 15 years in higher education. She works on helping students achieve their college goals. Well, she's experienced the obstacles that students encounter that keep them from getting out in 4 years. And we know that that leads to frustration, higher costs, and sometimes, you know, students not completing their degrees at all. Karina's professional background includes positions in academic advising, career counseling, leadership development. She's worked in higher education at a couple different colleges. She holds a bachelor's degree in journalism from the University of Missouri, a master's degree in college student development from the University of Iowa, and a doctoral degree in higher education administration from North Carolina State University.
Yeah, and actually a quick note too, in case it's confusing, is we're recording this intro after we did the interview with Karina. And so Megan's going to disappear for a little while because she had some sound issues. So just wanted to name that and she'll be back at the end. It will be wonderful.
You can listen to Gretchen take the reins and work with Karina until I can get my sound back. It's one of those joys of technology. It works for us when it works, but well, we've all had those moments. So let's join that interview.
Hey, Karina, I'm so glad you could be with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I look forward to talking to you.
Yeah, so I would love to know a little bit about what you even mean when you say graduation rates, because I know that's like a really like sort of a topic you're super passionate about. And but, you know, as an academic life coach and not someone who is an expert in the college admissions process, sort of Megan is that person. And speaking of Megan, she will sort of waltz in at some point during our conversation. But so I sometimes get confused even about that phrase. What are graduation rates and how are they measured?
Sure. And the first thing I'll say is don't feel odd about that. I think graduation rates are definitely complex. So I guess I'll just start broad view. Most people, when they are enrolling in college, say, oh, yes, I'm going to college. I'm going to be there 4 years. I'm going to graduate and get on with life. But the reality is a lot of students enter college and don't graduate in those 4 years. So what individual institutions do, and actually the federal government, the Department of Education, keeps statistics on graduation rates. And what this measures is for a student that enters school as a first-time freshman, taking classes full-time, how long does it take for them to graduate? So they measure it at 4 years because that is the traditional amount of time that students take to graduate. But you're also going to see that schools and the government also measure a 6-year graduation rate. And that's because a lot of students can take that long to get through programs. So that's what we're talking about. And there are some schools that are better at graduating students on time. And there are other students that either because of their situation going into school, it's easier for them to finish those programs in those time frames. So that's basically what we're talking about when we're talking about graduation rate.
And it's interesting to me that you said that it's the Department of Education who tracks these numbers.
There is a statistics branch in the federal government that measures lots of stuff in K-12 and also in higher education. And if you look at their numbers, they seem very dismal. When you look at that 4-year graduation, they are estimating about 40% of students are graduating in 4 years. I like to think it's a little bit better than that. Those statistics are a little misleading because what they are measuring is students who enter school X and actually graduate from school X. So there are a couple of different organizations out there that are trying to help schools better track graduation. One of them is called the Student Achievement Measure. It goes by SAM, and they have a website, and there are schools that are members of SAM. And what that institution is doing is helping them track all first-time freshmen who are full-time who come in, and then what's their outcome? So how many of them are graduating from that school? How many of them go on and transfer and still graduate in 4 years, but graduate from another school? Mm-hmm. You obviously have students that go into military and different situations. And then you do have students that drop out and just don't finish at all. So that organization is trying to help schools get a better picture of what their graduation rates are.
Would you recommend that families like check out that SAM like website, or is that more for people like you, for admissions experts and institutions?
You know, I think it's very helpful for families to look at graduation rates, but as they do it, there are some things you want to keep in mind. First of all, the more elite the school is, the better the graduation rates will be. And that happens for a few reasons. A lot of times they are admitting the cream of the crop student. So you've got a student who already is academically ready to be in school. If the student either has the money to pay for that school or has received a very good endowment, very good scholarship from that school's endowment, they aren't working as much as other students. There are just a lot of factors that help those students get in there and stay on track. Right. What you'll also notice, and I really encourage students to, or and families to think about this, is when you look at an institutional graduation rate, you're looking at the whole university or college. There may be certain programs at that school that drag down that graduation number, or have better graduation rates because of the resources they have. So the short answer is yes, check them out, but also get some more information as you're doing it. There are different reasons why graduation rates are what they are at schools. And what you'd want to unpack is if your student is looking at a school that appears to have a particularly low graduation rate, get in there and dig and figure out why. Is that a resource and support issue at that school? Or is it that they have a high number of students who are transient, and so it's going to look like their graduation numbers are lower because of that?
Yeah. Interesting. Well, and I know that you like to talk about both institutional factors and student factors that impact graduation rates.
Yes.
It's funny. This is the academic life coach in me. I'm like, I don't know if our listeners are note takers or not, but if they are, you can set up your notes to know that we're going to talk about both of those different factors.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's talk about institutional ones first. Like what do families need to know about what on the institution side can impact graduation rates?
Sure. Well, there are lots of different things that can impact it, but I think there are three that stand out as the most significant at a school. One of those would be related to the resources that the school has to offer students. And that could be the quality of academic advising that's available.
Uh-huh.
That would mean, are there advisors that can see students at any time? Are they knowledgeable both about the degree requirements and where students can go in their program? Some schools are very good at offering tutoring services, and this can be especially critical for students that are in highly technical programs like engineering. That can be the difference between a student being able to get a B or A in a course versus getting a D or F and having to retake the course. You also have schools that are working hard to address their student demographics. So if students are coming in with a couple knocks against them just because of their level of preparation they may have had at their local high school, there are some schools that are working really hard to try to bridge the gap there. Whereas other schools, their student population is so diverse that they may not be able to meet the needs of those individual students. Another thing that can impact graduation, and you see this in K-12 too, is actually even with honor students. Is your student going to be challenged at that school? Are they going to feel like they enjoy the experience and want to stay engaged academically? Or is that school not offering those types of things for them? So
right.
you got to think about who your student is and what they need, and then see if the school is offering those types of resources.
Yeah, well, and I wanted to say, in terms of the availability of tutoring too, it seems like another related but slightly different factor that's on my radar is the availability of academic coaching as opposed to tutoring. And I do know that more and more schools are starting to look at, like, how do we support kids, especially our students who have some kind of diagnosed learning difference, but even just any students in time management and organization and planning. And it's, you know, it's sort of that middle ground between advising and tutoring, the work that I'm doing. I was just at a conference where even a community college had some representatives there, because it was a conference on academic life coaching. And they are looking at, how do we actually provide time management, like coaching services, to the majority of our students.
Right. And I think that's important. And that definitely does fit in that same category of tutoring versus college skills classes. Uh-huh. You will find a number of students who come into college, and I've experienced this because I used to work freshman orientation when I was in the university system. You ask them about how many hours they needed to study to be successful in high school, and a lot of students get by with 1 or 2 hours a week, if that. Coming into college, you're told that you typically are going to need to study 2 to 3 hours for every credit hour you're taking. So this idea of needing that much time, time is one factor, but if you don't know how to use that time well, that's a challenge. And what I would find oftentimes is sometimes students who struggled and had to work really hard to get their grades in high school actually are more prepared when they get to college, because they've had to learn how to study. They've had to learn how to read their textbooks. They've had to learn how to manage their time. Whereas another student coming in may have a lot of good raw talent that's going to help them earn their degree, but they're going to have a learning curve coming in that they may not be expecting.
Right. Right. Yeah. So what else besides all those support resources are factors that impact graduation rates?
Sure. So the other aspect, and I'll divide it into two parts, is course availability. So when your student enrolls in college, there's assumption that everything they need to do to take to earn their degree is going to be available to them whenever they need it. And that's actually not always the case. Courses may not be available to students for a few reasons. One of them may be because classes fill. I previously worked at an institution that was growing at a really quick rate, and this was something that the school was really struggling to keep up with. There were different classes that would fill up, and we were having to figure out, how are we going to help students get classes they need to stay on time? So one of the things families may want to ask at institutions is about course availability. How often do classes fill, and what are the options for students when that happens? Something else that fits in this category is how frequently a course is offered. Another example may be that if a program exists at a school, but it's very small, meaning they only graduate a handful of students each year, they may offer certain courses on a fall only, spring only schedule, or maybe only once a year. So if students are getting into those programs, what I call off sequence, because maybe they've changed majors or they've transferred, they may not have the courses they need. And that ties into the second part of this course availability, which is what I call sequencing. There are certain majors where a student will need to complete course X to be eligible to take course Y.
Right.
So if course X is only available in the fall and you need it in the spring, you are now a semester off track for trying to finish that specific program. So all of those are things that can happen at the institutional level that will impact whether a student is able to graduate on time or not.
Yeah, you know, you're reminding me of a client who definitely did not graduate in 4 years from one of the UC schools. I think it took her either 5 or 5.5 years to graduate. But we were, this was a client who'd been with me for a very long time. ADD was impacting her, you know, her ability to keep track. But we created this big spreadsheet. Once she realized she wanted to go into a nursing graduate school, then it was like, oh my goodness, now I have to go back and do a number of additional courses to help get me ready to apply. And then, oh goodness, some are only available in the fall, some are only available in the spring. So we had to create this sort of complicated spreadsheet. Also, she was trying to figure out when could she go on a study abroad. So it's like, well, if you go on your study abroad spring semester, this is when you would graduate. If you go on your study abroad fall semester, this is where you would graduate, depending on when the courses are available. And, you know, there's just no way that she had the brain organization to do that thinking by herself. And there's also no way that I think she got some decent advising, certainly on campus, but this was just more detailed scenario parsing out that needed to happen that just didn't happen on, you know, with the professionals that she was working with on campus.
Sure. And you're kind of leading into this next point I would make, and that is there are factors going on at the institution that can impact how easy it is for a student to graduate. But if there are other things that happen in a student's life, or choices that students make as well, that can impact graduation. And I run a business called Maximize College, and I'm so passionate about this idea of four-year graduation and helping students think about what their goal is with college, because I've seen so many students struggle to finish in a timely fashion, which means they're spending more time and money on school. Right. And then they also can end up in a position where if they're not thinking about the end game, suddenly maybe they have graduated in 4 years, but they're now in a situation of, what exactly am I going to do now that I have this degree? But taking that all back, I take a very keep the end in mind approach when you're planning for college. And one of those, the reason I'm thinking about this with this particular student is anytime you make those changes in majors or come in undecided and stay undecided too long, you can really get yourself in a tough situation. So one of the strategies that I use, and really it's my primary focus as I'm talking to people about getting ready for college, is let's figure out what the end goals are. And I know the reality is we live in a world where people change careers, and you are going to discover a lot about yourself when you're in school if you're a student. But if you are thinking on the front end about what I do well, what interests me, what are my values, and how can I start putting the pieces together early on? Mm-hmm. A student will be in a better position to finish their degree earlier because they're going to be able to commit to their direction sooner. So my advice to folks is really do the exploration early on, not only just learning about what exists, but I coach people and try to help them with job shadowing as well through part of my organization. And make those decisions during the freshman year, because if you do it that early, you're a little less susceptible to some of these institutional issues. If you're a freshman in a class that you need as a junior is fall only or spring only, you can do some things with summer coursework to try to get through that, and it's no longer a bottleneck for you. But if you make that decision at the end of your sophomore year or summer of your sophomore year, you are now stuck in the thick of it, and it's hard to get out of that and actually still graduate on time.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, are there other factors that you see that impact graduation rates from the student perspective?
Definitely. So this is where I'd encourage parents and students to be thinking about what a student is doing while they're in school. One of those factors is the number of credit hours students take. Some institutions are recommending that students ease their way in so they can make that transition from high school to college easier. So they may recommend taking 12 credit hours. If you multiply 12 by 8, you do not have the typical 120 credit hours you need to graduate. So students can take fewer credit hours, but they need to have an action plan for making up those hours with summer work. The other thing are just behaviors while students are in school. It's simple things like, are they going to class so that they can get the information they need, doing the homework, just everything they need to pass the courses? Because high performance in high school, again, doesn't always make does not always lead to the same results in college. So students want to remember that it's important to make sure they're fulfilling their responsibilities for the course. I would also make sure, as students are choosing colleges, think a lot about fit. Think about whether your student is ready to go into college. You see a number of students now taking gap years because they just need a little bit of time to figure themselves out and to really build that discipline that's going to get them through college.
Right. Right. And sometimes you just need a break after all the discipline that's required to be a high school student these days. I think if I were going through high school now, I would need a gap year just to like chill out and collect myself again before. So that I can go into college actually feeling refreshed and ready rather than beleaguered and tired.
Sure. And I know some families can feel intimidated by the idea of that. But it goes back to, if your student can start college more focused and ready to do what they need to do and understanding better why they're there, they will naturally do better. And there is some research out there on gap years that does find students finish college at higher rates when they've had a gap year. And this is the research of the students who've chosen it. So it may be a self-selected group, but it is not causing problems for students. There are benefits to that gap year that really make it a good choice for certain students.
Great. That's good to hear. I was actually going to ask about what research there was. So I'm glad to hear it. And it so doesn't surprise me that they're able to graduate within the 4 years if they've had that break.
Yeah. And it's actually way more common. It's becoming more common in the U.S., but in certain European countries, it's very typical. Students don't always go straight to college. They're taking some time to volunteer or be part of an organization that's really just giving them a chance to mature on their own and also getting them exposed to different things. So I guess what I want parents to know is gap year does not equate hanging out at home, sitting on the couch, working my part-time job. There are formal gap year programs that are helping students learn more about themselves.
Right. Great. Well, are there any student factors you haven't mentioned yet that you want to make sure get out there?
I think the other one I would throw in here is student work schedules. Because college is expensive and just the price is rising, you're going to see a lot more students are trying to work part-time or full-time while they're going to college. And it is just hard to balance the two. So I don't want to say that there's anything magical about four-year graduation, that somehow you're a better person or anything like that if you graduate in 4 years, but it's going back to trying to help students maximize their time and investment. So if a student absolutely must work, if they go in knowing that they are on a track that is going to take longer, that is more planned. What I would just have students do and families to think about, I'm most concerned about students that think they can stay on a 15 credit hour a semester track and work 20 plus hours a week. It is very hard for people to do that, and I don't recommend it. So students and parents may want to talk about what solutions are wisest for them if that's the situation they're going to be in.
Sure. Well, and what about the costs of college? Is that a factor impacting graduation rates? Because I know if you stay in longer, it costs more. But I do wonder if families bite off more than they can chew at the beginning, freshman, sophomore year, and realize we can't afford this. And so either they take a break or they have to back off. And so aren't financial factors a piece here?
Absolutely. You can never say that there is a way to go to college without incurring any type of cost. But there are certain ways to get your education that are going to be more cost effective than others. As students are thinking about college, I think it's very easy to start thinking about what do I want in a college and what would be cool and what athletics do I want and what programs interest me. And all of that is a piece of that college decision. But if I were working with a student right now to say, let's start with the end in mind, you definitely want to be thinking about, number one, what can I afford? Number one, while I'm going through school, and what do I want my outcome to be when I get out? Do I want to, are certain types of education worth having $15,000 to $20,000 worth of student loans? Even if I can technically afford it while I'm going, affording it may be through student loans that you ultimately have to pay off. The other factor is, it is important to find a major that you're engaged in and can be excited about, but understanding where that can lead you. So those mm-hmm. two things are things I really encourage people to think of on the front end. One book that I really like, I do not remember the author's name, but it's called Right College, Right Price. Mm-hmm. And it's a gentleman who works a lot on helping families figure out what they can afford. And what I like is he groups institutions into different types and encourages families to go out and use online calculators. All schools now are legally mandated and required to have a cost estimator on their websites. And these are where students or families too can put in factors such as grades, so things related to merit, things that they would be reporting on their taxes, and get a guesstimate of what their actual cost might be, because the sticker price of a college is not always what a student is paying. So that's where it can be really misleading for students. That school that looks like it may be a lower price might actually cost more if a student's really talented and has certain financial factors. Certain Ivies are actually cheaper for students, even though their sticker price is high, because students meet the criteria to get significant scholarships.
Got it.
Yeah. So I like this approach of let's look at what I can afford, what types of institutions are most likely to fund some of my education, and then focus in as I'm learning about myself and analyzing graduation rates and all of these other factors. Let's look at schools that fit in this category that may fit for me.
Nice. Yeah. So let's move as we sort of move to closing up here. So what are the takeaways for parents or what are some or students who are listening? Like, what are the tips that you'd like them to walk away from this conversation with to help them in their admissions process?
Sure. So I think the two most important things a student should be doing while he or she is in high school is, number one, start your exploration process now. Start learning about what your friends' parents are doing, start looking at different things that are out there, and see if there's a way that you can actually do some focused career exploration. And that is either finding a coach or working with your guidance counselor or finding some online resources where you can do some in-depth skills, interests, and values assessments so that you can really have a good picture of yourself and the types of jobs that would match. What I also think is really important for students as they're going in tied to this graduation rate is don't let factors like athletics programs or what the campus looks like be your primary factor when you're judging schools. Really get in there and see how they would support you. So as a parent or student, do they have the resources that are going to support my needs? Whether I'm a student that struggled and I'm going to need some help, or I'm a really high-performing student and I'm going to need honors programs and different activities that are going to keep me engaged. Look at, if you are having to work, do these schools offer classes at a variety of times of day? If you need night classes, do they have night classes? So it goes back to looking at that fit. So I'd say starting out, figure yourself out, figure out what you need, and then you're going to be able to more easily find schools that can give you what you're looking for.
And Karina, I got my sound working again, so I'm back. Talking about explore, are we talking about just this general exploring my talents and work, or are we specifically talking about the idea of explore my potential major?
Sure. I will always encourage people, assuming they have the time, to try to think about what their end game would be. And for some students, that is a starting point. It may be saying that I would like to be a nurse. So I am focused on what is it going to take to get me to that goal. For other students, it's going to be broader and it will narrow down after that. So if you're assessing yourself and figuring out, gosh, I love helping people and I love what's going on in the medical community, maybe it's not the point of nursing. Maybe it is this idea that I'm exploring things in healthcare and mental health. So it's a bigger category. But either way, I think it's good to figure out where you may land when you're coming out so that you better understand what majors can get you there. Well, certain career paths.
Oh. I was going to say, and I have a daughter who's going into her sophomore year in high school. Mm-hmm. And we're almost in this good but bad scenario in that she's very good in almost all subjects in school. We know she's not going into the medical field because she doesn't like the sight of blood and things like that. But she's so good at so many other things. How do you narrow it down? She couldn't say, oh, I want to be in this career or that career. And she's good at doing lots of things. So how do you start that exploration without being really limiting?
Right, right. So you want to remember everything's going to get wider before it narrows. So when that exploration begins, it really is naming what are all these areas that I am good at, and then layering on top of that, okay, which of these would I actually have an interest in doing day to day? One of the examples that I give is I ended up working with people, but I also had this love for food and baking and cooking. But that for me is still a part of my life. It's just not something I'm doing professionally. So what I really recommend is for students that really the world is their oyster because they have so many interests or because they are skilled in so many areas, that's where the part of exploration that can be really important is getting out and getting firsthand experience. Mm-hmm. No job is just made up of the things you're going to do every day. That's a piece of it, but there's an environment that job exists in. There's a set of values that are embraced by different professions. There are all these things that are going to layer. And so when students go out and explore things, sometimes they start to figure out, wow, I like that, but the idea of going into that job and having to do that every single day, or I didn't realize how much pressure people who work in X field are under all the time, and I would not enjoy that. That narrowing down really starts by knowing yourself, but then taking that additional step of going out there and getting some firsthand experience. Now, to tie back, I agree with you. Students may not figure all of that out right before they get to college. And also the truth of the matter is sometimes we get out of college and we have a starting point and within 3 to 5 years later, we've switched gears. My thought is that students want to be sure that they're setting themselves up to have the maximum number of options in the little wedge that they would focus on. So an example of what that might be is if your daughter said the things that are must for me in the job that I have is working closely with people and using mathematics or using this, she would want to start looking at what kinds of careers fit into that category and then what majors could open the most doors for me. Certain career paths, you have to have a specific major to move forward. Most careers, though, are very open to students in a broad variety of majors. So the good news is the major isn't the limiting factor. It's the more I know about the back end and how specialized or broad my interests are in, the easier it will be to choose a major because I know whether I need to focus in a certain area.
I think that's very helpful because I know a lot of her friends are getting this almost paralysis of, oh, we have to start thinking about picking our majors now. And it seems very intimidating to teenagers.
Absolutely. And the good news, and this is maybe not true at every institution, but I would say the majority of them, is most schools have a general education core. And regardless of whether you have a major or not, that's probably going to determine the courses you're taking your first year. So if students are focused on getting out those general requirements early on and doing exploration during that first year, so their university or college may have a job shadowing program, or there may be a way to take a certain class that lets you put your foot in criminal justice, but it still counts as an elective, that's the time to do that exploration. Students don't have to have it all figured out before they begin, but they will find that they can maximize their time in college if they're investing the energy during high school and that freshman year. Students who tend to get themselves into trouble are students that think time is going to solve the problem. It's more so what you do with that time that helps you get the answers you're looking for.
Well, Megan, it's about time for the lightning round. Would you like to do that since we didn't have you at the beginning?
I sure would. Get my chance to talk now.
Yeah.
Well, let's start off with what's some really bad advice that you hear out in the world of college?
Sure. Well, one, I would say the biggest concern I have for students is feeling like they are under a lot of pressure to find the perfect college. The truth of the matter is there are lots of good schools, lots of students that get into wonderful careers based on those. So I would say the bad advice is thinking that I've got to go to a certain type of school in order to be successful. Students should think broadly. You're going to see, yes, maybe in one profession, I'll give an example of a law firm. There may be that person that went to undergrad and grad school at Harvard, but just in the same way, you'll find another person at that law firm who went to a wonderful regional college and a very reasonably reputable law school, and they are both doing the same thing, potentially making the same income. So don't put that kind of pressure on yourself or your student early on. Take advantage of opportunities and you'll be in a good position.
What's one free resource that everyone should know about but may not?
Sure. So I would like to plug something that I have out there for listeners. This idea of helping students graduate on time is one of my passions. So for listeners out there who'd like to get a guide on 5 common obstacles that students run into and ways to overcome them, they can visit www.maximizecollege.com. / college prep, and they can join my email list and learn a little bit more about the different major selection and career development topics I write about and get a copy of 5 obstacles to 4-year graduation and how to overcome them. I think it could be very informative for parents and students alike.
And if you were listening while driving in the car, not next to a piece of paper, we'll put a link to that website on the College Prep podcast site. What is the worst or perhaps best class you've ever taken and why?
Oh, goodness. Let's think about that. So if I were to look at, I'm actually going to talk about one of my graduate classes that I took, and it was out of a Department of Social Work, and it was really looking at intersections of who people are. So you can have how your socioeconomic status and your gender and your race and all these different factors impact your experience. So I would say one of the reasons that was the best class for me is it's really impacted my work to know that as much as we like to put people in boxes in this country and use assessment tests and find different ways to make people alike, everyone is so different. So I just connect that back to listeners. In the same way that these factors about us make us who we are, there are different things that are going to impact your student and dictate where they're going to excel the best. So their personality, their learning style, maybe their specific interests, the things they don't like. There are going to be all these things. So where that also ties back is just because Johnny down the street had a fabulous time at such and such college doesn't mean that's the best college for your student. So just keep an open mind and think about what those individual needs are.
And our very highly educational question for the day, shoes or sandals? Ooh. A good summertime question for us all.
Well, is barefoot one of the options? I notice if I'm in the house, barefoot is the favorite, but I'm definitely a sandal girl when I need to go out.
Gretchen, how about you?
Well, I love sandals for the look of them, but many sandals do not have the arch support that I need. So I'm more uncomfortable in them. Although right now I am currently wearing sandals.
I'm currently wearing my Birkenstock, so I understand, but I normally go barefoot in the house. So.
Yes.
Well, very good. Karina, if you could just tell everyone one more time where they can connect with you. What's your website?
Yes, it's maximizecollege.com, and it's a great way to get in there. I blog about major selection, college planning, professional development, career decision making. There's lots of goodies out there for people that want to support their students.
Well, thank you for joining us today, and thank you for all of this great information.
Great. Thanks so much for visiting with me, too.
Thanks so much, Karina.